You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. I'm very pleased to say we're joined by an old friend and much admired colleague, a member of the Senior Fellows of the Center for Security Policy, as well as the Vice President and Senior Fellow of a new organization established by Brian Kennedy and Bill Bennett called the American Strategy Group. He is Michael Del Rosso, an accomplished electrical engineer, as well as a vastly impressive strategic analyst, therefore a go-to guy on several things we're interested in talking with him about, most especially Charlottesville, a place that he happened to be on a momentous day recently, and here to talk about it, I'm very pleased to say, is Michael, both, I hope, on the basis of what you saw on the occasion of a riot there, Michael, over ostensibly a Confederate statue, and your insights as to where it has left us. Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Good to have you.
Great to be back, Frank. Thank you.
Tell us about your experiences, Michael, on the occasion, and as I said, where we are now.
I've lived in Charlottesville for 11 years, and I'm politically active. In fact, I ran for the Virginia 5th District just this last 2016 election cycle in the convention that we had. This is par for the course. Charlottesville, you know, it's tragic those two troopers died and that young woman, okay? But it was not only so misreported, but there other events had preceded it. So, for instance, on July 8th, I was also out for a rally that the Ku Klux Klan had staged.
Now, just for the record, this is not because you are a member of the Ku Klux Klan or a white supremacist or anything else.
I don't hate anyone. You know why I went out? They interviewed the organizer in the local Seville Weekly. The reporter goes, "So you hate people?" And he goes, "I don't hate anyone. I don't hate blacks. I don't hate Jews." He goes, "Well, I hate Jews." So I went out. I put my yarmulke on as a sign of solidarity to any jerk that would dare actually say he's a hater. And they did. But the point I'm making, though, is there was about a couple of dozen Klan guys that I never even got to see. But there was at least 1,000 people countering it, including large sections of Antifa. And the police got the Klan in and out, and they departed town, but the Antifa guys wouldn't disperse, and they fired tear gas on them. They had a massive presence. And so, and if you actually listen to the rhetoric, I mean, I have recordings, you know, you have the World Workers Party, Antifa. They're calling for the violent overthrow of the U.S. government and the replacement of it with the communist regime.
Now, this was at the first event, and then you were there for the second event as well.
Both events. It's both events. This is what they call for. So you see that frequently, and there's no one coming to shout them down. But they came. Look, the second event, they came for violence. And it's a travesty what happened. Let me just summarize it this way. We knew a travesty was going to happen because all the intelligence said so. Not only was the governor and the mayor and the vice mayor told of this, but the president of the United States was getting into his briefing package. Now, here, the president's a man that he's dealing with perhaps an imminent nuclear war. Yet this was going to be, it was so obvious, the indications and warning that violence would happen. And yet the political authorities that ran the entire show, so the state police showed up and they were subordinated to the Charlottesville Police Department, whether through maliciousness or incompetence, they failed crowd and riot control 101. So the Charlottesville police showed up without riot gear. They were ordered not to wear it. The Charlottesville police then couldn't respond when things got ugly. And the crowds were deliberately dispersed, opposing crowds into each other. The streets weren't blocked off. You know, 101 crowd control is you block streets and for vehicle entry and exit, because if you have a large crowd assembled, in this case, it was an illegal crowd, the Antifa ones, you don't want any vehicles going into them.
Okay. So, Michael, let me just ask you, a lot of the heat that was generated by this event, of course, was in the aftermath of it. And in particular, President Trump's characterization of what went down as a function of two sets of bad actors. He was vilified for pointing out that this Antifa group and its knockoffs and partners in crime, literally, were also deplorable individuals and engaged in misbehavior of a violent kind. From the vantage point of a person on the ground, an objective observer, was there anything wrong with what he said? And why was he so vilified for it?
his first remarks, I listened to. They came out before we even knew the details of the guy, the homicide guy in the car that killed the young woman. And then his remarks on Monday, where he expounded on it, were even more spot on. And I was saddened. The whole Virginia Republican congressional delegation threw the president under the bus or ignored it. It's probably the lowest possible rung of a ladder to be able to denounce Nazis, the Klan, and white supremacists. That doesn't take a lot of moral courage. And that's as far as most of these guys went. Some of them, like even my own Congressman Tom Garrett, said he commended the mayor and the governor. I still don't know what for. And he had an opportunity to defend the president, and he said, I'm not the president's speechwriter.
So, but just from your perspective, the president had it right. And I think the most important takeaway from this, for me at least, is this was really an exercise, whether it was provocation from the get-go or not, I think we could discuss, but at the very least, it was an exercise in trying to suppress freedom of speech by the hard left, and it seems as though it has been monstrously successful. And we'll have a hearing next Tuesday in the House Homeland Security Committee. I've just been talking to some of its members. There's a real concern that this throwing under the bus, as you put it, is going to continue. I hope not, because people need to understand this is a struggle for our First Amendment freedoms, and the president's right on this, and I think needs to be supported in his comments. Let me ask you, Michael, quickly to turn to one other topic in which you're also expert, and that is this question of electromagnetic pulse. I know you have, as a member of the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers, been pursuing very assiduously the threat that this kind of phenomenon, naturally occurring or man-caused, represents to our electric grid. We've had, and I was just talking with Bill Gertz about it, a former director of Los Alamos National Laboratory, Siegfried Hecker, dismiss this phenomenon and suggests that it's nothing but alarmists who have raised concerns about it. What's your professional judgment on that question?
Look, so I was past chairman of the Critical Infrastructure Protection Committee for the IEEE. I participated in the classified EMP Commission hearings a decade ago. And there's been not just the EMP Commission reports, but five Blue Ring commissions have all looked at this problem and said it's a serious existential threat, because it gets down to two questions. Are the consequences of an EMP attack serious and potentially sovereignty ending? And the answer is yes. And then is the probability of it occurring serious, a high probability? And the answer is yes. So for 55 years, the military has hardened the most critical nuclear command and control systems because it's a real threat. There's people that want to poo-poo it, but they don't ever come back and say why. So if you challenge them and say, well, and it's not just the Los Alamos guy. There's people that are former senior officials, like in Lawrence Livermore Labs or the Defense Nuclear Agency, that said it's not a big deal, but they don't have anything to back it up. And the signal, the tests that were conducted, because, you know, it wasn't a lot of money, but there was several millions of dollars spent testing weapons effects and such. By the commission, and then the military tested it well, say that it's exactly such a threat.
Michael Del Rosso, we have to leave it at that. I'm sorry to say there is so much more to talk with you about, but we look forward to doing so again soon. I appreciate your time today and the work that you have been doing with us at the Center for Security Policy, and congratulations on the new gig with Bill Bennett and the fabulous Brian Kennedy at the American Strategy Group. Come back to us again very soon, if you would. Next up, we'll talk with Rowan Scarborough about developments in Iraq and what the implications are of our failing to understand the threat posed by Iran there and beyond. Straight ahead.